Park is an offering of the Shasta Equal Justice Coalition, or the SEJC, and provided here on KKRN, kkrn.org, community-supported radio out of Round Mountain and Bella Vista, California. I'm your host, Sharon Brizolera. On this show, we talk to people who are working for criminal legal system reform. And today we have a really important voice in our community, April Carmelo, who's going to be speaking about murdered and missing Indigenous peoples movement and the work that she and others are doing in that realm. So welcome, April.
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you for having me. My name is April Carmelo. I am a Wintu, Maidu, Hachiman, and Tongva. I grew up in the Redding area, went to schools here, and then went away to boarding school, and then attended Haskell Indian Nations University, and then moved home 30-plus years ago back to Redding, and started working 27 years ago at Shasta Union High School District Title VI Indian Education Program. I am a federal grant program. I collaborate with multiple agencies to provide services to our students that are part of our consortium. We have 10 districts in our consortium.
Mm-hmm. Today, we're going to be focusing on MMIP. We should probably just have you here for a whole week. We're recording this at a time where federal funding is a big topic of conversation that's coming and going for a lot of different projects, but we're not going to delve into that too much now unless you want to, but that's something that's affecting everything we're going to be talking about, it seems.
Oh, yes, absolutely, especially at the federal level or the tribal level. I just gave a presentation just a couple weeks ago at the beginning of the month to the county superintendents of all the schools about how that actually trickles down from the Department of Ed to secondary education to the Office of Indian Education to our program. That's how close it is. It's only four steps by the time that it hits our county level or district level.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, very connected. I don't know if you had seen the articles that had come out in the newspaper just about a week ago about those county superintendents being interviewed about the millions of dollars that are federal monies that are coming to our school districts. And those are just other programs. Those aren't even the Indian Education Program. Mm-hmm. Although we don't have millions of dollars.
Right.
We're still affected by it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my guess is the work that we're going to be talking about. I mean, you have grants that we'll talk about later to do some of this work, but it has such a great impact on the possibility of changing of reforms of all type, right?
Oh yes, absolutely.
So, why don't we just jump into the MMIP movement that you are here to talk about today? And for listeners who don't know a lot about the background, I know you have a proclamation that you created that gives a little bit of the context. Could you read that for us as we begin?
Yes, absolutely. this is a proclamation with the City of Shasta Lake City Council. And I believe this is our fifth or sixth year that we've been doing this proclamation. It's called the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous People. Whereas May 5th has been declared National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous People, and whereas the state of California has the fifth largest caseload of missing and murdered Indigenous people in the United States, as California is home to 109 of the 574 federally recognized tribes and holds the largest population of Native American people in the United States, and whereas Indigenous women and girls are murdered at a rate nearly 10 times higher than the national average, and where 4 out of 5 have experienced violence and are targeted for murder, exploitation, and abduction in California's urban, rural, and reservation populations, disappearing at alarming rate with very little public visibility and justice. And whereas there is no comprehensive estimate for the number of Indigenous people who are missing or have been murdered since the beginning of colonization, and whereas the city of Shasta Lake is committed to spreading awareness of our Indigenous people who have gone missing or have been murdered, tortured, raped, trafficked, assaulted, and those who have not had the proper attention or justice, and whereas the city of Shasta Lake acts in solidarity with other tribal, city, state, and national governments and organizations in support of National Day of Awareness, May 5th, the missing and murdered Indigenous people. And whereas we must continue to bring awareness to the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people, only by doing so will we increase accountability of the systems and institutions that have let these crimes go silent and bring justice to the families of the missing and murdered. Whereas the city of Shasta Lake calls on its citizens to commemorate the lives of missing and murdered American Indian and Alaskan Indigenous women whose cases are documented and undocumented in the media and public record, and whereas to demonstrate solidarity with the families of victims in light of those tragedies. Now therefore be it proclaimed that the city of Shasta Lake declares May 5th, 2025 as National Day of Awareness of Missing and Murdered Indigenous People, and every year thereafter, the observance will be an annual national event to acknowledge the epidemic of missing and murdered American Indian and Alaskan Native people in the United States. Signed by the mayor, Rick Kern. Mm-hmm.
It's a powerful proclamation.
I've revamped it every year. I think the very first year I came walking in, I had 4 pages of proclamation information. And they said, no, we can only have 1 page for a proclamation. So we had to concise it. And so then I came up with in working with Sovereign Bodies Institute, which was a nonprofit organization and no longer exists. However, the information is still online. On that online portal, I worked with them for about three or four years, and came up with information for Shasta County, Northern California, and then California. So I have 21 and 22 statistical information that I would print. And then we started doing our MMIP walk. We became an entrance in the parade, so I attended the meetings for what used to be the Shasta Damboree. Some of the statistical information, if I could read that. In Shasta County, there were 10 women who were missing. The average age of a woman in California was 30 years old, and previously it was 24. Mm. And then 14% of MMIW in Shasta County are mothers. Previous, there were 30% that were mothers. Currently, there were 3 women that were marked missing in the database. In the previous year, there were 6 women. Currently, there were 4, and this is 21 and 22. Currently, there are 4 women that are marked as murdered in the Sovereign Bodies Institute database. 72% of the cases in Shasta County occurred since 2000. Mm. Previously, the previous year was 80%. So that was just Shasta County. And then Northern California, meaning Sacramento North, there were 41 women that were missing. The average was 33 years old.
And these are all Indigenous women?
Mm-hmm. Indigenous. Mm-hmm. Now, in the state of California, there were 191 women missing or murdered. Previous year, there was 188. Mm. The average age was 32. 1 in 4 in California are mothers. 1 in 4 in California are youth. When you look at the historical content of missing and murdered, Shasta County has a deep, dark history of murdered or missing. So some of the statistics that I originally submitted to the city of Shasta Lake were from an American genocide by Benjamin Madley. Mm-hmm. And I gathered some of the information from there and some other documents as well. December 4th, 1849, 20 were killed at the Upper Sacramento River. October 4th, 1842, 15 were killed, Clear Creek and Cottonwood Creek regions. October 4th, 1852, there were two. April 23rd, 1853, 10 to 15 were killed near Cottonwood. October 1853, there were 10 killed near Deer Creek. And that's from the Shasta Courier. November 5th, 1853, there were two. February 17th, 1854, nine were killed near Clover Creek and Oak Run. February 15th, 1854, two were killed. March 2nd, 1854, two more. March 3rd, 1854, two more. May 1855, 13 were killed. Main Cow Creek. In 1855, there were 133 killed of all recorded homicides of Indians in California for 1855. March 1856, six were killed near Shingletown. April 15th, 1856, 20 more were killed near Harrell's Mill on Cow Creek. A lot of information is already maintained and documented, not even by Native people, by non-Native newspapers and people from throughout the state. And ironically, a majority of those campaigns were funded by the state of California.
What was the reaction the first time that you presented the proclamation?
They were very, the city of Shasta Lake was very welcoming. In fact, I worked very closely with a couple people on the city council to bring that information. It's very difficult if you've been an individual that's been impacted by a loved one's murder or a loved one that has gone missing. And so, you know, it took many years to get where I'm at today. It completely affects your entire being and just flows outward from there to the rest of your family members. If you haven't been an Indian person who's been affected by boarding schools, abuse, domestic violence, sexual abuse, any kind of trauma, and then this happens when your loved one goes missing or is murdered, your whole world just collapses around you, and you dig as deep as you can into your entire being, and you reach out to all of your ancestors to just help you and surround you, to lift you up from that space.
How did you become involved? Because you've been a passionate voice in this movement locally for many, many years.
Well, I first became aware of missing and murdered Indigenous people when I traveled back east to a women's gathering in North Carolina, and I met some women from Canada. Like, you know, you read about the historical content like I read, but you don't quite make the connection until somebody right in front of you right now in whatever current year that is brings it to light and it's right in your face. Like, you can't deny this. And then it clicks. Those two links from 1842 and 2025 click. Every day in Canada, a woman goes missing. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, how can that be? Like, how can this really be happening? And then in 2013, my sister went missing. In fact, May of 2013, my sister went missing and from Tehama County. And the police, I called the police and they wouldn't come over. And so I kind of went a roundabout way of getting them to come over. I called her primary doctor at Greenville Rancheria Clinic. She was an elder at that point, and she went missing from her home in tribal housing. And the police wouldn't come over. They said, and I'll never forget this, they said, it is not a crime to be an adult and go missing in the state of California. And I couldn't believe they just said that to me. And I called the primary doctor, who I knew very well, and I told her, I need you to request a well elder check. And that's the only way I got the police to come to her place. And I had tribal council send somebody over with a key to get into her house. And that's what started it. And then fast forward to investigators later, years later, over 6 years later, is when they came to tell me that they found my sister's remains. But this is the kicker right here. In 2014, they found her remains, but they never told me until 6 years later.
And they found her in 2014, and then you didn't hear till 2019?
Yeah, they never told me. In California, counties don't talk to each other about missing people unless there's something that I'm not aware of or whatever. So they found her remains in Plumas County. She went missing in Tehama County. Those two never connected. Our whole family suffered for all those years. It's like being put in suspense.
It's such a hard place to be, of not knowing where to put your grief.
Even greater than grief, I remember very vividly standing in my living room and my family is standing around me. And I'm looking at them and it feels like slow motion. And I'm telling them, my feet are not on the ground. I'm floating and I lived that way for 6 years. I don't even know how. When you're in so much trauma, sometimes you just go through the motions of everything that's happening to you. And you go to work, you go to the grocery store, you do things that you normally do because you do them out of habit and your body knows where to go and how to do that. But my feet were never on the ground. Mm-hmm. It was so... I've never experienced that type of trauma before. Very, very... For lack of better words, it was very enlightening because it took me to a completely different level that I needed to go to. And I went through college. I finished my degree at Humboldt. And my GWARPI, which is your exit exam, where you have to do an essay for like 2 or 3 hours, I wrote about that. That was my essay that I wrote about. And I wrote about how I was so angry with Creator for putting us through this trauma that I didn't understand why. And that if He heard my prayers, then I needed to know that and I needed to confirm. So I got very specific about what I wanted from Him and how I wanted it to happen. And I am a firm believer in prayer because that was completely answered exactly the way I asked for it. Exactly the way I asked for it. And those who know me, I've shared that story with them even in more detail that, you know, when you reach out to whatever you believe in, however you believe, mine was Creator. And when I reached out, Creator just embraced me in everything that I was, all my trauma and everything. And I never questioned that again. I never questioned it again. And I am a firm believer in prayer. And so fast forward years later, just a year or so ago, the investigator who was on the case, on my sister's case, who had since retired, called me on a Sunday evening. I had applied for another MMIP grant or MMIW grant, and I didn't get it. It was just a small amount. It was like $10,000. It wasn't very much. And it was enough to do something, and I wanted to do something. And I was really disappointed that I didn't get that. And then the investigator called me, and he says, there's this RFA coming out for this grant, and you have to work with a tribe to apply for this. But back up just a little bit, a week or so before that, I had a dream about my sister. My sister and I were very close. We spoke daily. And she was my older sister. She was the oldest girl in the family. And I had a dream about her after I had not received that $10,000 grant. And she said, just wait, sister. I have something bigger coming. Just be patient. I waited. And then Sunday evening, about 8:30, I get a phone call. And anyone who knows me knows I go to bed early, 8 o'clock, because I'm up early. I'm an early riser. And he called me and he said, you know, there's this grant coming, this RFA coming out, and I really think you should apply. I remember you telling me that you write grants. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, how much is it? And he said, it's $1 million. So I approached Tribal Council, Greenville Rancheria, which I'm a citizen of Greenville Rancheria, and they gave me the thumbs up. Go ahead, apply for it. And so they said, okay. So I applied for it, and Greenville Rancheria got that grant. And I wrote Shasta Union High School District into that grant to work with students and to bring about awareness to four counties, not just Shasta County, but to Tehama County, mm-hmm. Plumas County, and Yuba County, because those are the predominant counties that Greenville Rancheria has citizens living in. Mm-hmm. So reaching out even further from Shasta County. And that particular grant has put people in place. People, all these things are just falling into place like it was always meant to be that way. We're working on a GIS database. Well, I say database, but really it's about mapping. GIS mm-hmm. is about mm-hmm. mapping and storybooking and creating those with the families of all those people who are missing. And ironically, other people have come into play that were maybe part of my program previously, like were one of my parents or my grandparents or even a student or things like that. Those relationships are just rekindled because mm-hmm. we worked together in different things previously, but now we're even more connected because of our connection with missing and murdered Indigenous people.
You're listening to Bending the Arc and a conversation with April Carmelo. You referenced that this movement used to be called Murdered and Missing Indigenous Women because of the high incidence of women that were missing. And that still seems to be the trend, right? The higher rates of women that are Native women that are going missing. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. But they've included missing and murdered gay, lesbian, transgender, and men. So now it's changed to MMIP, people. But mm-hmm. you can add all those acronyms in there. It's Indigenous people in right. general. It doesn't right. matter what your sex or affiliation is. Mm-hmm. It's all Indigenous people.
You have this broad historical perspective of some of the challenges, you know, because we see these high-profile cases of missing people, there are documentaries made about them, you know, here in Shasta County, too. But then so many of these, like you've acknowledged, that people don't know about or not high-profile. What gets in the way that people need to understand?
Well, systems and processes, in my own experience with dealing with my sister's case, systems and processes, those are the things that actually get in the way of us finding a loved one or moving a case forward or, you know, you don't grow up, like when you're in school, you learn how to read, you learn how to do math, like you know the steps of those things, right? Sounding out, phonetically, things like that, right? As an Indigenous person, I don't automatically know the process of how to file a missing persons report, how to access the Attorney General's office, how to get, funds from the county level to add to a reward system. Like, I don't know those things, so I had to, you know, Creator puts those things in my path and I answer it. Because we don't automatically know how to do that. You know, you learn math, you learn writing, you learn all those things while you're in school, but nobody teaches us how to file a missing persons report, how to do a police report, how to do, a DOJ application for funds. Like, if you're a victim of a crime, you have access to funds from the state level so that you could bury your loved one or, get a headstone or, you know, things like that. Like, you don't know how to do those things. And so when I say systems or process and, you know, like, why would we have to know that to begin with, right? Like, should that be part of our teachings? In all of my experience, even as a young child, dealing with law enforcement has not always been positive. And I've tried to overcome that in dealing with law enforcement. But, you know, every once in a while something comes along and it's a negative interaction at some point. And what I find is that one statement that was made to me, like it's like burned in my brain now, that as an adult, if you go missing, it is not a crime in the state of California. And I thought, wow, does that person even like have any compassion or kindness? You don't know what you don't know, and how jaded a system can be, and how frustrating it is. And the worst part of all is that when you're in trauma, how are you supposed to respond? How are you supposed to act? How are you supposed to navigate a system when you're in trauma? Anyone who knows anything about trauma, like, you bring an advocate with you.
Right.
Because you will not hear 90% or 99% of what somebody's saying to you as they're interviewing you.
Right.
You need somebody else, or you need a recording, or you need something.
Right.
Because you're in trauma. Like, you're trying to process everything that's just happened to you. To go years like that, like, who does that to somebody else, and why?
What were you told about why it took so long?
Truth?
Yeah.
I was told that the system failed me, that they did me wrong. That's the truth. Those were almost the exact words that somebody said to me from law enforcement. You're absolutely right, April. They did you wrong. They absolutely did you wrong. Because a lot of people think that missing and murdered Indigenous people is like new. People, we're in a genocide state here. This has been going on since contact. This is not anything new. Mm-hmm. However, it's just come to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And now we're being even more impacted. And the statistics that I read to you, those were only statistics that were documented.
Right.
Imagine how many people in a state that has the largest population out of any other state of Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what that would look like.
Mm-hmm.
Even back then, if everything was documented.
Right.
Back then. Those are just things that were documented.
Before we began recording, we were talking about the Feather Alert System, which it looks like in California wasn't instituted to 2023. what has been your experience of the usefulness of a feather alert since it's been implemented? I guess still fairly
well
new.
There's specific parameters in order to meet the qualification to be an actual feather alert. So, and there's lots of discussion about if a young person runs away, is that considered a feather alert? If a person goes missing, is that considered a feather alert? So, there's very specific parameters, and while trying to do a feather alert with another agency about one of our students that was missing, we were told we couldn't enact it. And then sometimes even school districts are afraid to be involved in that. They hold back, and they may not want to enact something like that because, and they minimize it. Oh, it's just a runaway. But do you know that for a fact? Or was that person taken by somebody they knew, by somebody they didn't know? I mean, right here in Reading, we're along I-5 corridor. How many millions of people go by our city every single day from other parts of Canada or Mexico or other states that are connected to us? So I think there's more fine-tuning that needs to be done with the feather alert. So that's probably all I'll say about it, because I'm frustrated with that process. And people or that are in places of power minimizing what's happening to young people, or for that matter, Indigenous people across the board.
And the lack of data is so significant, even among, as you say, cases that have been documented, but without the follow through, so hard to know. Or what are some of the driving factors? I mean, we've been talking about the driving factors in unsolved cases and those that are not being attended to, or if there was a murder, who committed the murder? How did that happen?
Because we're told, even though you may have reward money in place, we're also told that there's not enough people in law enforcement to put somebody on a case or to do investigations. So that's why a lot of people hire, or they fundraise to hire, private investigators to help that along. And so, like in my sister's case, we had reward money. However, when my sister's remains were found, her case is still open and still unsolved. So that puts us in a place of, well, we may have partial remains back. We still don't have the case solved. And so what does that look like for law enforcement if the case is still open? I mean, because you have to go through a whole process to get things back that they took from, like, her apartment, her personal things. You have to request in writing to get those things back. And
do you have to know what they are beforehand? Or?
Oh, yeah. And see, I don't know where I got the thought, but as they're going through my sister's apartment, they started grabbing stuff and taking it out. And I said, well, wait a minute. Aren't you supposed to give me a list of items that you're taking from here? And the guy looks at me, and I don't even know where that came from. It just popped right into my head. That's why I said, like, Creator, like, was intervening with me in the moment. And it just came out of my mouth. And then he goes, oh, okay. So then he went back over to the kitchen table and started writing things down. And then I looked everything over before he walked out of the door with my sister's things.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, I don't even know where that came from. And so, like I said before, like, you don't know that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so
I didn't know to do that, but I did it. And I don't even know where it came from. Just came out. Just came out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a good thing. So, you know, and unfortunately, you have to start a file on things. And, you know, the district attorney from Tehama County came to my house and wanted to interview me. And we recorded that session. And he said, nobody ever asked to record before. And I said, we're not just anybody. This is my sister we're talking about.
You know, and you're bringing up, too, like, feeling all that it meant for you and your family and multiplying that by all of the people who have gone through something similar. It's a lot of pain and suffering and trauma and trying to figure out how to work systems
that are not in your favor.
That are not in your favor.
That are not in your favor.
The movement in Canada, as you mentioned, has been going on for a long time. There have been a lot of writing and research and strong movements there. And I think sometimes people, as you say, either think it's a new issue or it's past or it's more in Canada than here. But we have currently a number of families in Shasta County.
Oh, yes, that are absolutely. And I think the number just keeps growing. And doing this work in this particular grant within the last couple of weeks, like all these new names came up that I didn't even know. I didn't even know about. So in writing this grant, the Board of Corrections for the state of California, there were, I believe, about 11 different tribes that received funding up to $1 million to do MMIP work within however, whatever parameters that they wrote that in, whether it was four counties or a single tribe or a collaboration with other tribes coming together to work a certain number of counties or a single county. That work is important, and I'm grateful that the Board of Corrections was able to set aside or have access to those funds so that tribes could utilize those funds to help their own people, but also to educate law enforcement or agencies that participate in this type of work. You know, tribes are understaffed. Law enforcement's understaffed. I mean, there's a lot of agencies that are understaffed, but still we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
The resilience, like, it's embedded in our DNA to be resilient. And so when you said, you know, we're in this trauma, you know, I was taught, reach out to those people that have already gone on and ask them to help you, and they'll guide you, and they will steer you in that direction that you need to go to. They're constantly watching. And so in all of your trauma or in all of my trauma, not only is it real, it's spiritual. And that's what I depend on to help me to move forward. Like, how do you come out of trauma? How do you move forward? Because it's immobilizing.
Mm-hmm.
It will
mm-hmm.
stop you dead in your tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And people lose their voice. They lose their mobility. They lose their connections with other family members, with other agencies or people. Because not only do you feel violated physically, verbally, you feel violated spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
You feel violated by systems, by people, by everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I've always said that. I have zero trust. Like, you really have to establish a relationship with me, and then you get little trust.
It builds. It has to be tested and built.
But mm-hmm. then, you know, even when you build that trust, sometimes it still gets violated. And so it makes you step back and look again. But, you know, the one thing that has always been consistent, that has never steered wrong, is my relationship with Creator and my prayers with, and my conversations with my sister, who now is my ancestor, and, you know, my grandmas, my grandpas, my family who's already gone on, trusting and believing that they are steering me in a direction that I need to go, or that they see that that's where I can do the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now you've got this incredible grant. You spoke a little bit about the partnerships, but what are you hoping will come out of that? You know, what are some of the activities and the relationships that will be developed?
Part of it is having billboards along Interstate 5. So that's being worked on right now. There'll be one right down between Anderson and Cottonwood on the right-hand side as you're going north. And for the first year, and then off from Highway 99 out of Chico, there's already one up right there. And then there'll be advertisements in movie theaters, social media, and getting... because you get overwhelmed with trying to get your information out. Like, you know, somebody has to help you carry the load. You can't always carry it by yourself. And me, as an Indian woman who has experienced this with my sister and other loved ones, including my own students from the school district that I work with, some of the people that are missing in Shasta County were my former students, or I've had interactions with them in that capacity as young people. So, you know, it becomes overwhelming. And as an Indian woman, it's hard to ask for help from other people because I have that trust issue. Because if I ask for help, what comes with it? What is my expectation and what is their expectation? Mm-hmm. What am I willing to give and what am I willing to take?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't always ask for help. So I'd rather just do it by myself, mm-hmm. because then I know it gets done in the way that I need it to get done. And then I don't have to, if it, you know, gets messed up, I only have myself to blame. I can't blame anybody else. But so... In moving forward with that, we want to get those words out, and we're doing capacity building right now. And so what we're doing is we're establishing the GIS training for the young people because they're so quick. I did another program, a small grant 3 years ago, and we mapped 239 villages in 15 hours. It was just phenomenal. The young people are so phenomenal with the use of computers and how to navigate those systems.
And it's powerful technology.
It's a powerful technology to use, but the experience that they'll gain from doing that is a lifetime experience. And to be able to interact with families in a compassionate, loving, caring way, that you're coming in as a helper,
mm-hmm.
to help them and to help carry that load for them. And it is heavy. Most definitely it is heavy, because we get tired. And especially if somebody has gone years and years and years and they still haven't found their loved one, it's overwhelming. And mm-hmm. you think to yourself, will I ever find them? Will I ever get the answers that I'm seeking? Or will I leave this lifetime not knowing what happened to them?
Yeah. And, you know, when you mention the billboards, I think sometimes we talk about, you know, nonprofits or issues, and education has a component. But from what I've read, and I have not read as much as you, but with cases of missing people, that keeping those names in the media and keeping attention on them is something that people with resources, or who, you know, there's the meme of the blonde pretty young white woman who gets a lot of media attention when she goes missing, when there's a lot of other people
not just
who
local
are,
but national.
Not just local but national. And so that is really significant, because one family to marshal those resources or to go to the media or to try to gather that attention is exhausting, and sometimes those doors don't open, right?
Oh, I know for sure that those doors don't open, because I approached media and those doors did not open for me. So I had to go, a different route. And that's okay. That was okay for me. I'll go a different route. I'm all about just getting through it. I'm like water. It'll just go around it, above it, below it, through it, however it needs to happen.
But, you're saying, too, is like not everyone has your tenacity or your knowledge of systems. I mean, there's a lot you were saying that you didn't know, because why would you? But you also have this lifetime of connections, and you're a powerhouse, and not everyone could be expected to be that. Or how
even powerhouses become humbled.
Of course. And exhausted.
Exhausted. Absolutely exhausted. And, you know, we talk about a white woman who got recognition here in Shasta County from media, and then national media coverage within, I don't know, 7 days or something like national coverage, right?
Sherry Papini.
Mm-hmm. Sherry Papini. Absolutely, Sherry Papini. Do you know, we became connected that way, and I reached out in a compassionate, kind way to her mother and sharing my story about my sister with her mother. And do you see why I would have an issue with trust? Because when you reach out to someone who you know is in pain because their loved one is missing, you know what that feels like. You know the hurt. You know the disconnect. You know the anger, the love, the whole array of emotions, you know. And then you reach out to them, and then it wasn't even true. I felt so deceived myself. I felt so deceived.
And all the existing needs.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then to think, gee, what I wouldn't have done for that much coverage for any one of the Indigenous people from Shasta County to be recognized at that level.
Mm-hmm.
To just be recognized in, 3 seconds of fame? 5 seconds of fame or something like that?
Yeah.
Just to be able to get that out there at that magnitude, at that level of a national level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people were calling me from, friends from other states. Oh, we didn't know this. Or do you know this person? I was like, no, I don't. I don't know this person, but I know her mom.
So the website and the Facebook site that is going to tell people more about these are being developed, and by the time this airs, we'll have those on the archived version, and also share it on the KKRN Facebook site.
Oh yes, absolutely, absolutely. And
but is there anything else that's important for people to know or understand about the grant?
There'll be additional trainings, and it's not just for law enforcement. We're planning to do at least 2 trainings a year within those 4 counties, not just to law enforcement, but there's a lot of different facets that come into play, not just law enforcement. So it could be a medical field. It could be a school. It could be a tribal leader. It could be anybody. It could be a city official, because it would be in the best interest of everyone if city officials became more aware, at least read information about it, at least read what information is out there, go to the website, become knowledgeable, share that information with other people. Because it's not just about Indigenous people. It's about all of us. like any attack on any woman is an attack on all of us. Mm-hmm. And at the alarming rate that it's happening to Indigenous people, and we're in a genocide state. And some people go, what? There was a genocide in California? We're not doing our state and our education system justice when we don't teach about the truths that have happened in California. Mm-hmm. And how this looks like it's coming full circle back again. And why would we allow something like that to happen to Indigenous people who are caretakers of the land, of the water, of the forests, of all these things? And we have a beautiful state. We have a beautiful state. And we have beautiful tribal communities that have endured so much. Like, I wouldn't be here if my relatives had not survived genocide. I would not be here. So when people ask you to come and speak, or ask California natives to come and speak, do they really realize what that really means? Like, we are the descendants of people who survived genocide in our state. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible thing to say about our state. It's a terrible truth.
And an important truth.
And an important truth. Because it's something we could do about it. Like, we can help with this MMIP. We can help our systems that are failing us. We can help them to change.
And like you're saying, it also affects other people. You know, because you have Indigenous people who are also elders, who are also disabled, who are also, we're all intersectional, right? And so
right,
there's...
Right, but you have Indian people or Native people who have intermarried with other nationalities or other mm-hmm. races. So across the board, somebody's going to be touched by this.
Right, right, right.
And why? Why? Why are we, why is this happening at such an alarming rate to Indigenous women? What is the grotesque urge for people to be so violent to us? What is it? What is it inside of you, inside of your DNA, or inside of your upbringing that would cause you to be this way? Greenville Rancheria, originally when I started doing this grant, I thought there was just myself and the vice chairperson. Her son was murdered in Yuba County. And then I found out that there was 7 people from our rancheria that were either murdered or are missing. And so when you have an adult enrollment of 77, that's like almost 1/10 of our population mm-hmm. is murdered or missing. We're a very small rancheria, 77 adults and 77 youth. So that's a huge impact for such a small rancheria. And that is part of the reason that I helped write the grant as well. So I'm grateful for anyone who comes forward with any information for these cases. And I know that Pitt River Tribe also received one of the $1 million grants, and they created a department just like we did for MMIP, a community services MMIP department as well.
Well, April, I so appreciate you sharing with us. As we bring this to the end, I know that you wanted to speak of people from Shasta County you had in mind when you wrote and are getting ready to implement this grant, and also that are at the heart of the walk that's going to happen in May.
It's called From the Mountains to the Rivers, a Walk for Justice, Honor, and Remembrance for MMIP, MMIW, MMIWGM. And it starts at 9
to 9:30. We meet at the City Hall parking lot. And then we circle up, and at 10 o'clock, the walk begins. And we ask that you wear red and bring signs for your loved one or someone that you're supporting that has a loved one that's missing or is murdered. And after the walk, we'll meet at the Larry Farr Community Building, and we will have drinks and lunch provided for all those people who walk with us on that particular day. So thank you for having us, and I hope that we can come back and share more information, whether it's on Indian education or whether it's on MMIP or any Absolutely. Of those other subjects. I'd love to be able to have other family members from these cases come forward and share their story about their loved ones so that we get that awareness out there.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you, April. And we will absolutely do that. You've been listening to Bending the Arc on KKRN, KKRN.org, community-supported radio.
It ain't a weakness to know we're meant for better days.
Show is written by Jacob Akana. You can listen to Jacob's music at jacobakana.com/music or on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or YouTube. You can find out more in the show notes, and the song we played was Ain't the Time.
But it ain't